Yes.
Governor, the Legislative Analyst Office had projected a $1.9 billion deficit. Would you be able to explain what your budget assumes differently from the legislature?
Yeah, I could, but I'd rather let Anna do that. Yeah.
What your priorities are for the health care special session? What legislation are you specifically looking for? What are your...
You know, we have Diana here for that. Yes, John. Wait, we're going to go over here to the first question, lady. Yes.
So do any of these numbers reflect the fact that we still owe about $40 billion to the federal government for unemployment checks that...
No, $10 billion.
It's not
$10 billion.
It's,
you're only off by 400%.
No, we. Are those reflected there?
That's not in our wall of debt, is it? We're paying it off. We're paying $300 million. We're borrowing. So yeah, that's a problem. You can add it there if you want to. But we that's a long term indebtedness. We can pay it by a certain amount. At some point, the federal government says you have to raise the employer taxes. We don't like to do that when the economy is shaky, but we'll manage our unemployment insurance fund. Now, remember, when people are out of work, we have something called a stabilizer. The unemployment insurance kicks in, and people get money even when they're not working. That money keeps the economy going at a higher rate than it would if we didn't have it. So that borrowing lent to us by the federal government is a good thing. It kept things from getting worse. Now we pay it back, but we'll pay it back over time, and I think we can handle it. Yes, Mr. Mize.
Let me try a broader approach to the first question you got, which was about...
Are you being critical of your colleagues?
Not at all. But I want to Never. I want to point out that your predecessor at one point declared the deficit gone a few years
on
ago.
On or off?
Gone. There
was
no
gone,
deficit.
Gone.
Similar to what you're proposing today. And I want to know, that didn't turn out to be true. How do you convince the public that these numbers are balanced, that the deficit is truly gone? That's what effectively you're saying the top line here is the deficit's gone.
Deficit's gone, wall of debt remains. So we got to keep our eyes clear here. Well, the difference is we've cut massively. We cut 25% out of the colleges and universities. We owe $10 or $11 billion we borrowed through deferrals to our schools. We cut health care. We cut the age of the blind and disabled. We put families on CalWORKs. We got rid of redevelopment. We got rid of the Williamson Act subventions for open space land. You name it. We did things that were never done before. Plus, we have the new taxes for 7 years, and We have the proposition that brought back $1 billion in the so-called single sales factor. So we're in a better place. Now, why does it always go down? Because everybody gets exuberant because the money, and they put, and they show need. This is need. This is right. How can you not spend it? And it's very hard to say no. And that's basically going to be my job. That's what a, if you know what a governor is, a governor on a machine is the when the machine tries to exceed a certain speed, then the governor then depresses the speed. So that is the metaphor for 2013.
Governor, it also goes down because our revenue system is so volatile. How can you be so confident in these numbers you're projecting? I mean, we've just had a fiscal cliff discussion where they were talking potential recession.
Well, that's interesting,
Yamamura. Factors.
You're talking about confidence in numbers, but you are very confident that the federal government is going to give us all the money that they promised. And I'm the one who said, hey, we could lose maybe billions of dollars if things go awry in the federal government. So, yeah, we don't know going forward. But we do know paying down debt and building up a reserve is the way to go. Now, paying down debt is a form of reserve because if you don't have these debts, then when things go bad, you can borrow some of that money back in the same way. So by paying down the debt, we put ourselves in a stronger position when things go bad, as they inevitably do. The other thing you do is don't spend too much money. Keep the brakes on. And that's something that's very hard to implement because all the groups are paid. There are a lot of people paying dues to their trade associations, to their organization, and they're expected to deliver. And what they want to deliver is spending that we don't have the money for. And I accept and embrace my role of saying no. I will say no because California is saying yes in a very progressive way on many, many different levels. And we're saying yes to education. And that's the other point I want to make. Yes, there's inequality out there. Yes, there's hardship. But I want to take the money that we do have and put it into our schools and our colleges and to help people help themselves get that, not a fish, but a fish hook, a fishing rod. And that's investing in education. And that is the social program that I think will give us the biggest return on our investment. Boy, yeah, let's get good. This is the second woman we've had here participate in this male club here.
You talk about keeping the brakes on and, you know, keeping the special interest from spending, but how are you going to have that conversation with lawmakers who could potentially override you?
Well, that will require a lot of charm.
Yes. Now, your weighted student formula.
Well, we don't call it that anymore.
Well you said those.
Local flexibility. Bringing government closer. Yeah.
Whatever the terminology is today. But how is it different from last year? And how are you going to sell this to suburban school districts who feel that they're the ones who get the short end of the stick here?
Because our future depends on it. If we don't invest adequate funds in our children and in their education, we will not have the economic well-being in future years. This is an aging society. It's serious. And the inequality is growing. We have to do what we can to offset those global factors. One of the most important ways we do that is to invest in schools and invest disproportionately in those schools where there's greater difficulty in learning. And certainly, if you look at a classroom in Piedmont and you look at one in Compton, it's a lot different. The families have far more money, far more access to the better things of life. And to the extent we can offset that by putting more funding into those school districts, we're going to do that. Governor. And I think people will come, and I think the majority of people are going to see that. And it's our future. So maybe some suburbanites might not see it, but I think the ones who can see over the horizon and realize that an aging group of people have a vested interest in making sure that the generation coming along and who's going to pay their Social Security and maybe operating their nursing home when they're sitting there drooling, they may want to make sure that they're making enough money that the social harmony is maximized rather than minimized. And social disharmony is a real option here, and that's the whole essence of the progressive agenda, to try to compensate for the global inequalities that are growing.
This coming year, do you budget for any increases in state worker costs, or are you going to try to keep their salaries right where they are right now?
Well, that's a collective bargaining strategy, and even though we have to put all that stuff in the budget, we approach it carefully, because remember, there's a guy named Colonel Bulwar, who you may or not know, and this, a doctrine was developed out of a practice that he tried to exercise called Bulwarism. And that is, you tell the employees, "This, I know it's right, I thought about it, here's what you get." Collective bargaining doesn't allow that. Collective bargaining means you got to meet in good faith, listen to the other side, and you go back and forth. So we have to enter those negotiations with an open mind, but we have to live within our means. So I don't want to put too many of my cards on the table, although everything's in the budget, so you can figure out kind of what the outside parameters are.
Governor.
Yes?
What are you projecting for cap-and-trade money, and how are you going to spend it?
It's in the budget there. There's a few hundred million this year, a few hundred million next year.
What are you spending it on?
I'll let Anna answer. That's a nit.
Well,
that's a small amount.
There have been some questions about whether there's enough to enough going on that
we're being very careful. I don't make any, I don't have any illusions about the future. There's a lot of uncertainties, but I am proud of the fact that California is leading the way in dealing with climate change. And so, how much comes in cap and trade relative to the total overall budget? It's a very tiny amount. What's important is that we're dealing with climate change, because there's three big facts. Well, maybe there's four. Climate change is going to alter the conditions It already is. Forest fires, fire season, rising sea level. We saw it in the East Coast. Big problem. It means real money. That's another risk. You put that on the wall of debt. Secondly, we got this inequality. Thirdly, we have the aging of the population. We got to deal with all this stuff. So that means we got to be very careful how we spend our funds and generate the wealth that will allow us to proceed.
Yeah. Are there any assurances, or what do you tell parents and students about how this is going to impact tuition? Can you guarantee there will not be tuition increases?
Look, guarantees is not part of this world that we live in. It's uncertain. But I will be at the Regents meeting next week. I'll be at Cal State the following week to discuss the budget issues. And we're telling them that they can, and the phrase is, deploy your teaching resources more effectively. So just write that on the wall. That can exfoliate to include more. There's many ways you can do it, with online teaching, more time in the classroom, refocusing on the emphasis. But the point is, we want more kids to be able to get through school quicker without pushing up costs in the historic way that we have.
But are the kids in tuition, given
the whole point is to avoid that.
Okay.
And that's what I'm going to try to do.
Just to follow on that quickly, how much leverage do you have to actually control how CSU and UC spend their money? And what are you going to do in terms of using the bully pulpit to try to...
I'm working with the two groups. I'm going to the meetings. I am the president of the Regents. I'm going to exercise that responsibility. And I'm going to work with the other regents and trustees, and I'm meeting with professors and administrators and faculty representatives, and I'll take it as far as I can. But there is a certain way of higher education. It's often described in the word quality, which is very abstract, and it's nationwide. And if you look at it, it grows in cost at twice the cost of living. So if our budget's going to grow at 5%, but the university wants us to give them 10 or 11% every year, there's a gap. And that gap cannot be met by tuition, at least not in we have to narrow that as much as possible. And therefore, the people in the university are going to have to find a way to do the same thing with fewer growing resources than they're historically used to.
Or movement in that direction from, you know, you were at the Regents meeting in November and the trustees meeting in November. Any movement in that direction yet?
I would say the discussion is still embryonic. We haven't totally clarified what's at stake here and what has to be done. So I want to move diplomatically but carefully. The last time I used to go to Regents meetings, it didn't turn out to be as productive as I would like. So this time I'm going to be listening a lot, meeting behind the scenes, and figure out, can we turn down this relentless increase in spending that is so much higher than the normal cost of living? So everybody's going to have to pull together, administrators, the leadership, the professors, and the rest of them.
Funding to those programs that have previously been cut?
What I say is that fiscal discipline is not the enemy of democratic governance, but rather its fundamental predicate. And I'm going to tell them that fiscal discipline, balance, allows us to take care of the needs of the people over time instead of just having a momentary rash of excitement. Then we pay with a hangover several years later. And I am juxtaposing somewhat of an abstraction against the immediate pressures, but that will be my challenge for this year. Yes?
How to make sure that this new money will go to the most needy children?
It will go to the most students in need, because the formula will direct more funding over the next few years based on the number of students who do not speak English as their first language and are not fluent in it, the number of children in low-income families, the number of foster children in foster care, all that will be part of a formula that will direct money where it's most needed. And this really is a classic case of justice. To unequals, we have to give more to approach equality. And that's the principle. I think it's a powerful principle, and I think the legislature will respond, even though there will be a lot of debate back and forth.
Governor?
Yes.
Part of local control for schools would be to allow schools to have more control over their own revenue, allow them to raise taxes at a reduced threshold of passage. And there's some proposals on that. What's your view on that?
I'm not prepared to opine on that aspect of subsidiarity, but you are right. You're raising a point of control, and what are all the aspects of control? But I'm not going to go there in January, so I'll carry on. And I'm also mindful of the fact that we just had a tax measure, and there's a lot of exuberance to find more and more ways of taking in more government revenue. Well, the fact is California is not bashful in collecting public revenue or raising funds. So I want to be careful, but certainly we're going to have a lot of discussions on that topic over the next couple of years.
Yeah. 2013 was going to be the year of fiscal constraint or fiscal restraint. Can you just sum up generally how this budget reflects that sentiment, if it indeed it does?
Well, it maintains the cuts that have been made in the past few years. It selects where to put the emphasis to get the biggest bang for our buck, namely schools that have the greatest need, and to our universities to emphasize teaching and learning on the part of our undergraduate students. So if you look at, and in terms of the health care, moving cautiously, offering two pathways, envisioning a very intensive discussion about how to actually implement this Medi-Cal expansion that is called for by the president.
Governor, what expansion are you? You're
considering a statewide program or 58 separate county programs? Is that what you're saying you're considering?
Kind of something a little bit like that.
How is that efficient if you had 58 different?
Well, that's
programs.
Where you have to talk to Diana over here. I've got my expert standing by.
Just to follow up, are you committing to the optimal expansion of Medi-Cal? Is California committing to that?
Yeah, we're committing, but we're committing given the promises that are being made to us, being realized, and working it out in a sustainable, thoughtful way so we don't find ourselves in a big hole in a couple of years.
What's the information you're still waiting for to make that decision?
Well, I'm going to defer that to this is a complex topic.
Yeah, it is.
This is a little above my
Governor, can you,
pay grade. Yeah. They are.
I'm from Orange County. They're going to.
What's your name?
Brian. Brian Joseph.
Brian Joseph. Okay. Yeah, I see your column occasionally. I don't know there's any hope for your readership.
They're gonna look at you saying that it's an austere budget and say that it was a 5% increase in spending. How do you respond to that?
Well, there's a 5% increase in the wealth, and if you go to Schedule 6 in the back, and you take a look at the number of employees in relationship to the number of people living in California, it's lower than it's been historically. In fact, it's lower than when I was governor. If you look to the spending in the general fund, it's lower, going back all the way to Reagan. If you look at the overall spending, it's lower than it was going back 10 or 15 years. And in fact, there were a few years when I was there that it was even higher. 30 years ago. Now, you have to be careful when you look at that because a lot of things have happened in the meantime. But basically, relative to our wealth, we're investing at a very similar level to what it's been historically in California. So, and I also want to say something that there is this doctrine that government is the problem. Well, government has problems, maybe not as great as newspapers, but it does have problems, and we'll deal with those. But government is still the means by which a free people act together, act in concert. We have to act through some mechanism. We have local government, we have state government, we have the national government. This is a good thing. And there is no freedom without a vigorous and honest and transparent government. And so just hacking away at government is more ideology than it is consistent with what the American tradition is. So whether it's the Weekly Standard or Orange County Register or whoever all these people are, there's a doctrine. Now, I know on the other side there's a doctrine at the Nation and Mother Jones and all those numbers, but when you slice all that ideology out, we do have to invest, and we have to spend some money, and that's what we're doing. But I'm going to try to spend it wisely.
Governor, you talked a little while ago about the dangers from Washington of the budget, and the fiscal cliff negotiations have got to ongoing. Can you talk, though, in broad terms about how dangerous to the precarious balance of this budget that you've laid out?
Let me give you one thing. We have a little problem here with the war.
Mike's off.
My terminological inexactitude. I noticed in the paper a few weeks ago that Obama had said we might have to cut $400 billion out of health care. Well, that was $400 billion over 10 years. So I figured $400 billion over 10 years, that's $40 billion in a year. And if it's $40 billion in a year in California is 10%, or probably 12, let's call it 12. 12% of $40 billion is $4.8 billion. Now, maybe that's the Medicare, maybe it's Medi-Cal, maybe it's something else, but I just said rough numbers. If you're going to cut $40 billion a year, our share of that could be 10%. So that's the order of magnitude. It's probably not going to be $4 billion. Maybe it would be something else. And they probably won't cut that much anyway. So the good news in the short term is they'll probably blink. But if they ever did get religion and start balancing that budget, we could be in deep trouble.
Well, but at the
in the short time, term.
And so in some sense, you're actually advocating for them to blink, to kick the can down the road.
No, I'm advocating that fiscal discipline is the fundamental predicate of democratic governance. All right, guys, I think that's it. You had a question. Did you forget it?
The rest is on the correction side of the...
Correction side.
How much are you counting on saving by turning back the federal courts, getting rid of the
Look,
special masks?
Here's the point I want to make. I'm glad you asked me that question. We haven't. The numbers I'm seeing is that the cost of medical care in California is three times the cost of medical care on average throughout the prisons of America. We're spending three times more. So it's clear to me, and it's clear to our experts, that we're providing more than the Constitution requires. Because of that, we are taking money from other places. And some of the places we're taking it is not just education, but in the prisons themselves, rehabilitation, drug treatment, reentry programs, education, and things like that. So the courts, paradoxically, by protecting the right to an ever-expanding health care, are also siphoning money that could go, and I will tell you, would go, as long as I'm governor, to preparing inmates to return to society and stay there with greater probability. And that's where I'm seeking. So I would say to the extent we can save money by terminating the consent decrees and the masters, we'll put that money into improving the situation for our prisoners so they can learn more, they can deal with their substance abuse problems, and we can get them ready and supervise them once they leave.
Governor, Republicans are praising your fiscal discipline. Democrats are sure to criticize it. Does that put you kind of on the wrong side or buying
No,
their
it just
program?
Requires a level of dexterity that I've been known to deploy in former years.
Paddling to the left.
No, it's just that what are we supposed to do here? And also, we've got the cuts. We got to keep the cuts. We got the money. So, and I'm here with the pen, and I will sign or not sign, depending upon what it is. But before we get to that point, I'm going to spend a lot of time with the legislative leadership and with the legislators and with the groups that tend to pressure them to see if I can't get everybody on board. That's what it is. America is overcommitted. It's a big mess in Washington. I see California not as the failed state that those characters, they don't all write in the Orange County Register, but I'm not going to mention their names. I give them too much dignity. But there is a couple of characters that are basically written off California as a failed state. And, yes, we got some problems. But I see the challenge is showing demonstrating California how to deal with the complexity, the challenge. And the challenge is we're an aging society. Productivity is growing more slowly. To the extent that it grows, it's not going to the workers. It's going to the owners of capital. And we got to deal with climate change, which is going to make everything more expensive. We're dealing with it. And I realize it's hard. The Democrats want to do one thing. Republicans want to do another. And I'm in a fairly strategic position to make things work. So I would like, at this stage of my life, which I like to say, to do something that will make California a leader and an example of what America has to do. And that is both fiscal discipline and imaginative investment in technology and society and the environment and all the rest. So it's not just one thing. It's many things. And I think California, that'll be the test. Now, it's a lot, but I'm saying California can be the model. And to do that, we got to keep Republicans and Democrats on a playing field here that gets us to the end. What?
Are there any cuts you're willing to restore this year, the IHSS or anything like that? Let's start with IHSS. Mike's off.
Well, that's a warning to me. That's to say, shut up, Brown. I think we've exhausted this press conference.
Wow.
I think we've exhausted. Thanks a lot.
Governor, what do you mean by your strategic position?
You know what I mean. Some things are better left unsaid.